Hello, Feely Humans. Welcome to another episode of You, Me, Empathy. My name is Known Wells. I am the creator of this show. I'm also the founder of the Feely Human Collective, where we collectively, holding hands, hugging, grapple and grow with the superpowers, the wonders of empathy, vulnerability, and emotional curiosity. Just in January of this year, January 11th, 2023, we launched a membership community. It's been out just under 2 months, and it's pretty freaking great, if I do say so myself. And I encourage you to sign up and become a member. Paying members get access to lots of events, weekly heart-to-hearts with me on deep dive topics. We have our Movies That Make Us Feel Movie Club. We have our expert workshops every month, our ongoing bi-monthly emotional check-in series, and just a space to be seen as your mushy, messy, beautiful, feely human self. So if you want to check that out, go to feelyhuman.co/membership. That's feelyhuman.co/membership. Okay. Today, this episode, it's episode 247, on recognizing our humanity in the news with V. Spear. If you don't know V, they are a journalist. They're on TikTok. They have like almost 3 million followers on TikTok, which is bonkers and amazing. V and I, in this conversation, we talked about why asking for help is courageous, the importance of seeing beyond what people are saying, creating boundaries for the information we take in, and recognizing our humanity in the news. V is a reporter. You can follow them on Instagram and TikTok at Under the Desk News. That's also the website. And they also have a podcast on Lemonada Media, one of my favorite podcast platforms, called V Interesting. V Interesting is a podcast name, and it's great. And you know, I am someone who is often like wanting to be informed and wanting to stay connected and making sure that I have all of the facts and information. And sometimes it's just so goddamn overwhelming, right? And so V is someone who the approach is very human. It's very down to earth. I mean, literally, they are under a desk. You got to follow them. Just promise me that you'll follow them on Instagram or TikTok. I'm not on TikTok, so I don't know what that platform even is. But follow them wherever you are at, and you'll be overjoyed. It's not, again, when they cover things that are maybe hard, V is always looking for the humanity in it and our shared connection. And it's really beautiful and entertaining. So give V a follow, Under the Desk News, TikTok, Instagram, etc. And I really hope you enjoy this episode. We talk about so much stuff, so much good stuff. And I'll just stop there. You have a listen. Enjoy episode 247 on recognizing our humanity in the news with V. Spear. Empathy, the official podcast of the Feely Human Collective. On this show, we explore the struggles, the triumphs, the brights and the darks we face as humans trying to be human on this wondrous and overwhelming pale blue dot. You, Me, Empathy was created so that we can be witness to our collective humanity through the lens of empathy, vulnerability, and emotional curiosity. We aim to destigmatize mental health, lead fiercely with our hearts, feel our feelings without shame and judgment, and share our courageous stories so that others may feel less alone and more connected as Feely Humans. You, Me, Empathy is a brave place designed to inspire the beauty in each of us. because each of us, in all of our kaleidoscopic parts, makes up a magical whole that deserves to be seen. Today, I'm V. Ebullient to be here with sometimes TikTok superstar, host of Under the Desk News, and V. Interesting podcast host. It's V. Spear. Hello, V.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
Oh, my goodness. So happy to have you. I've been binging your V. Interesting show all week. It's delightful, and it's a lot. It's just a lot. News is a lot for me.
It really is. It's a lot for me, too, which is part of why I created my own news space, because then I was like, well, I get to decide how much I can handle and share with everyone else.
Yes. And I really want to get into the nuances of what that looks like for you. But before, we always kick off the show with an emotional check-in. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good, though I have to be honest. Anytime somebody asks me, how are you feeling? It like immediately triggers me to be like, how am I feeling? I don't do a ton of reflecting, which is why I'm glad to be on this podcast, because it's a good reminder to just check in with yourself and, you know, not reactively say good. But today, actually good. Although when you asked me, it almost made me cry because I feel like we don't get asked a lot in the news how we feel. We're not supposed to have feelings, you know? Mm.
Why do you suppose that is? I mean, I would say that maybe is a human thing, but like in particular, people in the news, why can't you have your feelings?
So people will conflate feelings with bias, and they will say, well, if you have feelings about something, then you're too biased and potentially even too biased to accurately report on it, which is not true. You can have feelings, you can have bias, you can have opinions, you could have strong opinions and still report accurately. So I think it's a little bit of that. And I think also I went to school undergrad for theater, and in theater, one of the things they teach you is that if you cry, the audience won't. And you are here to provide for them an outlet for them to explore their emotions silently in the darkness of this theater, collectively with the public that surrounds them. We're having this universal experience, but I'm supposed to be delivering it, not experiencing it. Mm. And so I bring a little bit of that method into doing the news as well, which is if I'm breaking down and I'm crying, people's reaction is going to be to try and comfort me. And then you can't listen for your own, you know, vibe check.
Yeah. That makes sense. It's like the therapist who's crying with you is probably not a good idea. It's probably a little irresponsible.
I have made therapists cry before, and I can see them really trying to, like, you know, they hold their face together so well. But sometimes we're just sad and we can't help it. And that's okay.
It's human, right? Yeah. And I love this idea that, first of all, we all hold bias.
Yeah.
Right. Unconscious or otherwise. And to deny us of that truth is just going to lead to more bypassing of parts of ourselves. Right. If we're not being curious about the bias, then it's just going to rule us or whatever. Right.
Right. We've had this idea that I want just the facts straight. And it's like, yes, you should have accurate facts and reporting, of course. But stories are about humans, and humans are more complicated than just what happened to them. The A, B, C, D, here are the steps of what happened. It includes their reaction, it includes the public's reaction, and includes why they made the choices they did when they became a part of that particular story. So I think leaving the feelings out of it, or saying that including any kind of feelings or any kind of bias makes the story overall less factual, is a great disservice to the audience, because the motivations of that person, the humanity of that person who's centered in the story, and stories are about people, matters. It matters to provide context to why they are where they are and what should happen next.
Yeah. I personally want to hear and be witness to the humanity of the person talking about the news. Because I do want to be like, I don't want to, it's not being influenced, but it's them. I want to see them being connected and moved and impacted by what's happening. Like, I don't want to see a robot reporting the news. I want to see the humanity in all of it. And then me as the viewer, as someone who's consuming the media, I need to use my critical thinking and assess and like, okay,
what am I taking in? What is real? What is not? What do I believe? You know, that's the work that I need to do. That's my responsibility.
I think that's exactly right. And that's what I hope that listeners do is hear the story, hear, you know, the facts of the story, the context of the story, but then go and get curious and apply that to how this shows up in their regular life. How is this going to show up in conversations with friends and family? Does it affect you? Not every story can affect you. You can't hold water for every single thing that we report on. But yeah, I hope that it triggers something in somebody to say, like, I've either felt like that before, or makes them think about what they would do if they were in the situation, or what they think should happen next, but always relating it back to themselves and the humanity that is driving these stories, for sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And building trust with the audience is part of being a good newscaster. I would argue it's one of the biggest parts. Like, the facts are the kind of easier part to get right. Most of the time it's like, did that happen? Can I prove it? Okay, that's right. A fact, done. But can I gain the audience trust so that when something is complicated or tricky or scary, they can look to me as like someone who's going to mirror for them maybe the direction they're most likely to land on? If that, so many of the stories that we do are confusing and painful. And I think the United States leaving Afghanistan is a great example of this. There were the facts of us leaving Afghanistan and the whys and the policies behind it and the timing. And those were the facts. Those are the hard facts. But then there was the veteran reaction. There was the Afghani reaction. There was the human loss. There was so much more to it. So when people were hearing the facts of something as complicated as the pullout of Afghanistan after 20 years of war, they needed to be able to look to the newscasters, to the storytellers, to the newspaper writers that they believe in, and see how they were taking it. Because that just gave them like a head start on the direction we were going to go in, which was, this is important, but this is a deeply painful experience, and it is scary, and it's not going perfectly, and I'm not going to tell you it's going perfectly, and we had a plan the whole time. You know, there was a lot of human loss during that.
Yeah, well, it's what it makes me think about is it's never just one thing, right?
No,
like right. It's empathy is contextual. So if we look at the facts, yes, there are facts, and there's a ripple effect, and mm-hmm. we need to be like, look at the nuance. We need to look at all the details in between and see how it impacts communities. Like, that is the work of being mm-hmm. human. It's not, it's never just one thing, right? And we don't live in a vacuum.
No. And that story was so personally important to me because I have a lot of veteran friends. I work with a lot of veteran organizations, and as I was reporting the news, the breaking news was the United States is pulling out of Afghanistan right now. The last helicopters are leaving in the next 48 hours. And I saw the public's reaction to that. And then I started to see, I'm a millennial, I just turned 40. So I was in my first year of college in New York City when 9/11 happened. That is directly tied to why we were in Afghanistan, and all those feelings from my friends who watched the towers fall came back. So now I was managing them thinking like, well, why were we there? Was this even worth it? And then hearing from my veteran friends who were deeply struggling with suicidal ideation and with the public's reaction to the pullout of Afghanistan, with a lot of people saying, because we went there for nothing, it was a waste, what you did was wrong, right, and vilifying these folks who, you know, I have my perspective on the military and the military at that time and patriotism. That's maybe for a different podcast, but these folks were signing up because they truly believed that they were going to protect this country and the people that they loved. It was a time of deep patriotic spur of action. And to tell somebody that the work they did over there didn't matter when their stories are deeply rooted in human connection with the kids that they saw and played soccer with the Afghani interpreters that they work with the ways that they did build a democratic society, whether it stood or not, we can't take away every single thing that these folks did and the heart and the sense of self that was tied to that. So I immediately switched my reporting from just, you know, fact after fact after fact update what was going on with the pullout to, hey guys, I want you to know that I see you and I see your comments. And you know what? Why don't we all take a quick little second and remind ourselves about the Veteran Suicide Hotline? And they saw a 268% increase in calls during that first week of the pullout of Afghanistan, because it wasn't just that the United States politicians decided we were done messing around over there. It was that people's real lives, careers, emotions, feelings, and memories were also being destroyed. And what does that mean for them when they already live in a world where maybe they don't feel appreciated or they don't feel understood? So you got to look at the whole story. And I think that's what makes a good newscaster, is seeing how people respond and stopping, which a lot of times the cable news doesn't get to. And they also don't get to be face to face with their audience like I do on TikTok, and say, whoa, whoa, okay, wait, I actually am seeing how you're hearing this story and how it's hitting you. So now we're going to change, because the story is different. What we have to talk about is different.
It's beautiful. I have goosebumps. It's a beautiful example of that nuance, right?
Yeah.
So I am, you know, I'll put me as an example here. So when I hear about war, or I hear about veterans or military, I know that I have a bias, right? Mm-hmm. And I have a bias toward thinking in binary terms, in the sense of war is wrong, right? That's a simple statement. Maybe that's true. And it's probably a lot more nuanced than that, right? A veteran, oh, they're a Republican. Maybe that's an assumption I could make. That's mm-hmm. my bias, right? And that is bias and assumption that I need to examine and investigate and get into the nuance that you're talking about. Because you're right. Like, what is true is that it happened, and whether or not we know the reasons for them going over there, personal reasons, we don't know that. We're making assumptions, right? Mm-hmm. So looking at the big picture and understanding that they're human, right? And there was a backlash, as you pointed mm-hmm. out, and that's hard. And can we put ourselves into their shoes for a moment and understand that?
Yeah. And the thing right? that I think about when I think about folks who sign up for the service is there's the propaganda signing up for the military that we think of, like, with our grandpas and go to war and Uncle Sam wants you know?
Yeah.
And there's a romanticism to that then went away after the World War. And then we saw great failures with the Korean War, with the Vietnam War, with the Desert Storm War. There was great mm-hmm. failures. And mm-hmm. we lost a lot of that kind of nostalgic, we're the good guys, back-to-back World War II champs kind of stuff. And then we had 9/11 happen. And when you think about why people join the military nowadays, it is for opportunity. And people in general seek opportunity wherever they can get it. And if you look at who's signing up to be in the military, it is predominantly lower income folks. It is immigrants, actually. It's first generation immigrants are yeah. one of the biggest populations signing up for the military right now. And what we think of as, okay, well, they're war machines because that's what we saw on TV and that's what we were told and that's what the movies tell us is cool or whatever, or that's the prescription for masculinity in a toxic place. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks sign up because you could go to medical school while you're there. You can get your teaching certificate while you're there. You can get a degree in engineering, in plumbing, in all kinds of trade work. A lot of folks who sign up for the military will never see hand-to-hand or active combat. They will see active combat in the way that they will be a combat vet. They will have gone to a territory that is experiencing conflict. But a lot of the work that's being done right now is computer, electrical, drone, aerospace engineering. It's incredible. And the military having the budget they do is one of the only places where this education and this opportunity is available. So of course, if I'm a poor kid in Northwest Arkansas with not a ton of opportunity, maybe not the funds to go to college, and someone is telling me at 17 years old, hey, I've got something for you. One, think about the mentality you had at 17. If somebody gave me $5 to do something, I would have done it. Never for mind sure. the benefits that they sell you on. And that's different. But I think if we want to break down where we show empathy and where we show intolerance, we show intolerance in the way that folks are manipulated into joining the military industrial complex that does great harm and benefits not the people. And we look at the folks who signed up and who served and say, you know, they probably did come from a good place. They probably came from a place where they have a natural protective instinct and where they saw opportunity and where they wanted better for themselves. And the journey they took and the lessons we learned, we're not going to learn if we don't do that ourselves. But we can look at them and say, like, you know what? I'm going to grant you the fact that you had good intentions when you did this, and that what is happening right now with the military is very painful to you, and we can share that.
Mm. Beautifully said. Yeah, I love that. That's so important. I mean, that exercise, that ability to take a step back and look at it all, look at the big picture, right? Be curious, use your critical thinking, ask questions, is essential. It's essential in building community. It's essential in building connection and growing and perspective, and you know, all of it.
It's so difficult for just talking about men in particular for a moment. Men 13 to 25 have a very difficult time showing up in the world in a way that isn't identified by the standard of masculinity, which is presented through the media, through, mm-hmm. you know, extremes. And my brother used to say, and I watched him struggle with it, and I think I just learned so much from him, in that he used to say that the only things that men were allowed to do were have feelings when it came to hooking up with girls, fighting in parking lots, or crying at the national anthem. And I was like, okay, bitch. He's like, I'm only allowed to have feelings about those things, about sex, fighting, and crying at the national anthem. And I was like, why do you feel that way? And he's like, because anything else is vulnerable and people don't like vulnerable. And so then they'll make fun of you, or there's just not space for it. And he was extremely lonely. And I think that a lot of men maybe experience loneliness in their feelings in a way that I'm so grateful now there are so many places that it has become acceptable and encouraged to talk about your feelings and to talk about the wide breadth of feelings that men experience, so that they don't only get to manifest through sex, fighting, or patriotism.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir.
I know. I mean, let me tell you about being a man, nun.
Please. I mean, it's funny because the topic of masculinity and toxic masculinity, and it does come up on this show. You know, I identify as a man. I'm 41, just turned 41, so we're relatively the same age. And I sort of had the benefit / curse of being witness growing up to a very violent man, right? Mm-hmm. So, and me being very sensitive, I learned to guard myself and protect myself from that. And I saw, as you know, the role model being a person where, like, I don't want to be this way. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to be violent. I don't want to be deeply arrogant in the way that he was and presented, right? And so I had a leg up, I guess, in that way. So I, like, you know, to this day, unfairly, perhaps it's my armor, my protection, men have to work harder to earn my trust than any other group, mm-hmm. right? And that's probably unfair, and I need to unpack that, but you're right. The reality is, you're right. Like, there is a deep systemic thing that has been occurring in terms of men and toxic masculinity and what a man is, and we have to be these beacons of strength, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm glad that tide is changing, because vulnerability is a beautiful strength. And you know, it goes back to how you run the news, how you talk about the news. You know, you're bringing a little bit of yourself. You're being a little bit vulnerable. That allows others in, right? That allows others to see you and connect and relate and say, like, ah, I'm not alone in this mm-hmm. struggle or joy.
I have always really valued the skill that I learned probably from my grandmother in seeing people and in seeing what they mean beyond what they're saying. And really taking the time to be present with them the way that I want them to be present with me, to understand what is at the root of what we're talking about here right now. And in the news, you know, we're often talking about left versus right, or conservative versus liberal, or whatever, and that one side is right and one side is wrong. What I hear a lot in the strong rhetoric that I get in my comments from the conservative side, if we take them first, is fear and a want to protect. We have this idea that you have these folks who have been told that something very dangerous is happening, and they believe in their soul that that is true. So we have to accept that.
Yep.
And if you believe in your soul that that is true, and you have a protective instinct in you, then you are going to be rabid, wild, unleashed when it comes to protecting what you believe in your soul is true.
Yes.
And there are certain media personalities and news personalities, and just people in general who benefit from getting folks like that worked up and sort of deploying them as their army. And, you know, the people behind all of that aren't suffering the consequences of breakups in their families or not seeing their children because of the rhetoric that they espouse at, you know, Thanksgiving dinner. And when you really get behind it, I'm like, okay, this is a group of people who did not feel seen, did not feel heard, did not feel like they belonged, felt like the news and the conversations that we're having around politics were so academically led, and intentionally keeping them out. And then here come along somebody who says, I see you. I see you and you're special and you are going to be the winner, right? That it is human nature to gravitate towards that. Mm. And when we can be honest about that's what's happening in politics, it is a tug of war in which the people are at the center and being radicalized to fight with each other and reject facts and reject truth and reject humanity in favor of individualism, then we can start to break down like, yo, we don't actually want to be like that. People don't actually like that. I can promise you, somebody who hates me on the internet and thinks that I'm like liberal scum or whatever they might think just by the way that I look, if I were hurt, they would help me. I know that they would. They wouldn't. We don't look at people and say, well, are you a Democrat before we issue CPR? We are inclined to help people and to want to be the helper and to want to be a good person. And so I think if we could break some of this individualism that is driven in the media and have more of these conversations like we do on Be Interesting or Under the Desk or a lot of other TikTokers that are coming up as media personalities who are like, can we just talk about this? Because I don't understand it. Do you understand it? You tell me what they're telling you. I'll tell you what they're telling me. And somewhere in the middle is probably the truth for us. I think we have a chance at getting back to the fact that people are at the center of all of these stories. People are at the center of politics, no matter how much the political leadership of whichever side wants you to decide that you're an issue. You're not an issue. You're a whole person with a whole set of circumstances that have made up who you are and what you care about. You're not a single issue voter. You're not a single issue person. Nobody is. So I hope that we can break some of that and get people back into thinking big picture. What does this mean for me, for my family, for my future, based on facts and not based on feelings? I can't believe I just said that. Not based on feeling, toxic feelings.
Well, you're absolutely right. I say it all the time on this show, but it's the world isn't binary, nor is healing, nor is anything really. So like the systems at play want to pit us against each other, right? They want to look at things in this versus that because that's how they maintain power, right?
Right.
That's how they keep us fighting. That's how they keep us in active conflict with one another. And that's not how it works, right? Because that's taking little slivers of our humanity and bumping up against other slivers, but it's not the whole. It's not the whole.
Yeah. And it's just the most raw parts that they want to bump and pick. And I know. It's just not fair.
Our fear, so often, our insecurity, you know, all that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And one of the things we explored after the Roe v. Wade decision was the concept of grief in the media and in the way that people were reacting. Because so often, and this is why I think it's important to have these spaces that aren't just, that's why I'm under the desk. Under the desk came from the place of being like, I don't want to be at the desk and another authority figure telling you what's going on. There are plenty of people who are much better at that. Like we're under the desk, like it's a secret, right? Like we can come here, we can learn, we have this little space, and then we'll go back to our respective water coolers and cubicles and talk about what we learned.
Love it.
But one of the things that we don't talk about enough when people are receiving media is grief and the grief that we feel from hearing these terrible stories. So you hear a story about the 10-year-old who was denied an abortion in Ohio and had to go to Indiana to get it. And now they're going to prosecute that Indiana doctor, even though it was legal at the time, even though most people will agree that a 10-year-old is not capable of carrying a child to term, being a mother. And what happened to her at the root of it is really where we need to be focusing our efforts in punishing that person that did that to her. Mm-hmm. And we can all agree on that. But what we don't do is we hear that and we feel a certain sense of grief, or we feel a certain sense of sorrow for some of the stories that are really, really hard to hear stories. And instead of giving that grief its proper due, we use the stages of grief to react to it, right? We react with anger or denial or bargaining or any of these things, but we don't give ourselves a time to say, hey, that story hit real hard. It hit so ugly. The comments are getting very ugly because people are reacting just, you know, as you do when you have a keyboard. And I am feeling grief right now. So how do I manage my grief is different than how do I manage my anger or my call to action. And so after the Roe v. Wade decision was overturned, I was at VidCon. It was honestly the most surreal experience ever because I was like in this place where I was supposed to be perpetually happy and like being under the desk and so fun and talking about the podcast and like meeting different creators and like making TikToks and like, I don't know, getting presents from YouTube and stuff. Like I was supposed to be so happy. And this happened. And I knew that every single person who looked at me was going to want answers because I'm an answer-giving creator. And so we were talking about what we were going to have on the podcast, how we were going to talk about it, how we were going to script this, what we were going to do. And they were like, well, we're going to get a constitutional lawyer to come in and explain it. And I was like, no, no more talking, no more information. It's done. What we feel is grief. And so we had Claire Bidwell Smith, who's a grief therapist.
Yeah, come on. She's been on the show.
She's incredible, incredible. Yeah. And it was exactly the right thing because in that moment, people weren't able to take in more information as to what the constitutional ramifications were of were going to be, or what the state constitutions were going to be able to do, or what the history of the Supreme Court meant. It, too much. So it was like, let's get Claire on. Let's talk about grief because there are people here who lost something. And we're going to talk about the loss, because that is the biggest feeling of all the feelings we're having. And honestly, I'm so grateful that she was there for us and for the listeners. And I still go back and listen to that episode to remind myself of things like, right now you're surviving and surviving's what you're doing. This is going to occupy all of your thoughts. So if other feelings have to get put to the side or if other issues have to get put to the side, they do. If this is the one that's making you feel the most scared and upset, then let it be the star of the show. It'll be another feeling star another day. And just that this is the grief that we were feeling was temporary. We would come from that grief with calls to action and things to do. But right now it was okay to just be sad and confused and frustrated and confused and grieve.
It's beautiful. Yeah. You experience something in a trauma, you bear witness to something that gives you that grief feeling. You're like, I'm going to do more research, right? Like that's not, but that feels like a trauma response. That feels like I'm going to like pack myself into more and more information. But I feel like that's part of how we've been set up to process these things. But the reality is, as you pointed out so beautifully, we need space to feel with each other and be witness to that feeling and honor it, right? And recognize that it's a reality. That we all of us humans feel it.
And it was broken. The glass was broken. You know, we could not put that glass back together. I think often of like, you know, what Jackie Kennedy did after JFK in Dallas. You tried to put him back together and you can't. And we have these reactions as people to put things back together and to like want them to just put a Band-Aid on it, just fix it, just paint it, just do whatever the case may be, just hide the broken part. And sometimes you just have to sit with the broken parts and be like, okay, well, they're broken, but they're still here. And I can think about what I'm going to do with them later. Am I going to have to throw out this broken thing and build a new one? Or can I fix this broken thing? You don't know right when it breaks. Right when it breaks, we're just sad that this thing that we liked is broken. It's changed. And we don't know if it's changed for the better or the worse. I've had lots of things break and then I've gotten a better thing later and been like, oh, that old thing I valued so much. Ha, this one is so much better. Yeah. And I've had things break where I'm like, that was irreplaceable. And I will always hold a little bit of sadness for it. And we don't get over it as quickly as we wish that we would. It's like when celebrities die. I think of this all the time. When Kurt Cobain died, I stayed home from school. I was in sixth grade. I stayed home from school for 8 days. My mom let me sit like a full Shiva in a day and was like, okay, you are very sad. We're going to do this. And to this day, I have like a reaction when Kurt Cobain comes up. I didn't know him. I was 12 years old. How connected to Nirvana could I have truly been in the way that he was presenting the music and experiencing that music? But to me, oh man, you couldn't tell me nothing. And I carry that with me to this day, and I don't know him. So sometimes folks will make fun of people and be like, why do you even care? It doesn't affect you. And it's like, because it does. It reminds you of something in your life that matters to you that now you're seeing the fragility of. And that's okay. That's important.
Yep.
You can be sad about things that quote, don't affect you because they did affect you.
Yeah. Yeah. You have that connection because you loved Nirvana and you were 12. And at 12, you have a lot of feelings that are ill-defined, right? Yeah, I get it.
And right now, I have a lot of feelings that are ill-defined. And the more I read newspapers and hear these stories and try to retell them and invite people in to explore them with me, I'm like, you know what? I still don't know. The ways that the news will affect you is so weird. But there is something else that I learned from Claire during that process, which was you do have to do something. Like you said, some folks will dive into research. Some folks will go and make a snack. Some folks will go have maybe one too many glasses of wine. I don't know. There are different, you know, techniques that we do, but doing something does help you move from the absolute paralyzing feeling we get from time to time when we're experiencing the world's atrocities. So for me, I like to do the dishes after. People have asked, how do you calm down from the news? And I'm like, I do the dishes. I put on a podcast that has nothing to do with anything, something silly, or songs that are silly. I love ABBA and disco. For the sads.
Yeah, as you should.
And then I'll go do dishes because when you're done, you can look at something and say, okay, I've accomplished something here.
Yes. Tangible progress.
Yeah, you feel better a little bit. It's silly, but it helps.
Well, have you ever, do you always have dirty dishes to clean, or you're like, partner, go dirty some dishes real quick?
Typically, I'll cook something and then I'll have dishes, or I'll decide that like today's the day I'm going to dust my entire house, right? Or like today is the day that I'm going to do every piece of laundry. But mostly, yes, we have two dogs. My partner and I cook a ton. And so we do typically have a dish or two available. I will also decide that I need to reorganize all my clothes, sometimes just folding clothes all over again. Something about that is very helpful. It's just something to keep your hands busy. Like my grandma used to say, you got to keep your hands busy, just like you have to keep your mind busy. And just giving yourself a break and saying, it's okay if I miss a big story. It's okay if I miss a big update right now. There are so many people paying attention and holding water for this cause that I care about that sometimes it's okay to let them hold the water. It's like Anchorman. Like, I'm going to hold my time. You're going to hold your time. And then we're all together. This cause is moving forward. But compassion fatigue is real, man. And in the news and in media, it is just as real for us as it is for anyone else.
Yeah.
Because in addition to telling the story, then you also get all the comments that are like, you're a hack. I hate your haircut. So it's a little bit of everything, but. If you look, I find looking at the big picture is definitely helpful in managing these things.
So agree. And then, so dishes, you do them now when you feel overwhelmed. Like when you first got started in doing this work, like what did those boundaries look like? Or did you have them? What did you struggle with?
I didn't, because you don't know what to do when you're starting something. You don't know where the boundaries are. I didn't even know if I was in the sea or on land in space. I had no idea where I was. So I didn't have any structure when I started. And I cried literally all the time. I cried all the time because I didn't know what else to do. I didn't know how to stop. I felt a great responsibility to the way that the account was growing and the way that people trusted me and the way that I was seemingly uniquely able to tell a story in a way that resonated with folks and made them feel safe and made them feel informed and smart. And I just would go and go and go. And then I would cry or stay up all night. I had like a really hard time sleeping. And that went on for months until my wife was like, I think this is actually like doing great harm to your physical and emotional self. And if you keep doing it, then you're going to lose that magic thing that you have. And so we have to take breaks. And I started with like little breaks. I was like, okay, I'm going to take a 5-minute break. Or
Starting small is good. Yeah, yeah. I love that. Smart.
My dog was originally trained to be an emotional support animal, but like actually deeply trained on how to like recognize different traumatic responses. And so she would come in and like demand that I pet her, and I would ignore her and ignore her, ignore her. But that was like her little old training kicking back in. She was like coming out of retirement to be like, it's time to pet me so that you don't do bad stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So I would recognize when other people, even creatures, were telling me, I think you're going too hard. I think it's too much. I think it's time to take a breath. And so then I would take 5 minute pet the dog breaks, and I would be like, ooh, if Miss Vanjie's in here and she's getting all worked up, then probably my energy must be really off the charts to like, and I have to stop, you know? So I would do that. And now I have boundaries in that I have developed an audience that I really, truly understand. And I think for content creators who might be listening, don't worry about your number, how many followers you have. Worry about, did you find your people? And if you found your people, that will take care of everything for you. And so I found my people, and I'm very happy with the group that we have. And now it's about going deeper with them. But I also know what stories I don't have to cover. I don't cover sex crimes against women or children, because my audience does not want that. It is too much to be scrolling on TikTok and come up on something like that. There are people who cover it better, and there are people who seek that content out because they're strong enough or determined enough, or this is the thing that they're going to be able to help with. I'm not going to be the one that can help with it because it affects me too much. It makes me too sad. So I don't have to cover those stories. So I'm like, okay, off the plate. I tend to focus on making sure that we have a little bit of good news every week so that people feel hopeful. The mission of my news and podcast is to make people more conversational. So I don't have to give them a huge, long, terrible, every single bad example of what happened. I just have to give them enough that when you're out at a coffee shop talking with your friends and it comes up, you're like, oh, I know how to talk about that. Mm-hmm. Or one of your parents says something to you and you don't think that that's quite true. You could be like, I know how to talk about that. And that has helped me so much, not worrying about giving a volume of information, but giving accurate, fair information that makes you more conversational and just helps people process and kind of like think for themselves in a reflective way, as opposed to in an aggressive, like, well, I know more than you way, you know?
Reactive way. Yeah. I love that. It's beautiful. So I did see, I'm not on Twitter, but I did stalk you on Twitter a little bit, and I saw, you know, you mentioned you turning 40 recently.
Yeah.
Happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
And you mentioned something about learning you're finally not afraid to ask for help, which is such a courageous thing to admit to. I think asking for help is amazing and essential, and you know, we're not individualists, we're collective. So how did you come to that? Like, what has been your story there in getting to that point?
So I think, like a lot of queer people, especially queer people my age, I did not expect that I would be this old. So I do not actually really know what to do, honestly. I don't.
I actually relate to you. I always think like, oh, for the longest time, like, I'm not going to live till 20, right?
I didn't think so.
I'm 41. Look at us.
I did not think, growing up, all I could do was get to 17, because that's when I was going to graduate high school. I was going to move to New York City and everything was going to get fixed, right? I was going to be away with my people. I was going to be able to come out. I was going to be able to do everything. Was going to be fixed when I went to New York City. Mm. And for anybody who lives in New York City, it gets really hard when you get there. But it did get better. It did get better. I found my people and whatever. And then I thought, okay, I'm with my people. I waited so long to be myself. And because I was living so fast and just like for the moment, because it was like when you finally, if you were starving and you finally got a sandwich, you would eat that sandwich so fast. Mm-hmm. That sandwich was my New York City in my early 20s. So I thought, okay, well, I'll probably live to like 23. And I didn't have a death wish. I just didn't think that I would be old ever. I never really saw a lot of old gay people. I just didn't know what happens to you when you grow up and you're gay. And so it was 23 and I was like, this started my like hatred of birthdays, because as they came, I just kept thinking, oh, I'm running out of time. And so I didn't have a plan. So I've really kind of like struggled through each year and what each year was supposed to represent. And I think it's part of why I'm so present, because I didn't know how to be any other way. But at the same time, I turned 40 and I was like, this is decidedly older. This is decidedly an adult, right?
It's a milestone.
It's a milestone one. I thought it was the one where you're over the hill. My mom said, no, that's 50. And I was like, okay, well, for me, 23 was over the hill. So when I was turning 40, I was like, I really want to do something. I really want to like share with people what I learned. Da-da-da. And I was like, but I learned such the hard way. I learned so hard how to get where I am that I don't know that I actually have the advice for people. Maybe I should ask her advice. Like, what is your 40s like? What can I look forward to? And really just face aging, face that other people have really great experiences that I can learn from, and that I don't have to learn everything the hard way or by myself, and that it's okay to have stuff to look forward to too. So I put on Twitter, mm-hmm. I'm turning 40. I'm not afraid to ask for help. I have found people love to be asked for help. They love it. People love to share the things that they learned. People are inherently good, and they don't, at the heart of them, want people to pay dues the same way that they had to. Mm-hmm. Even if they tell you that they do, they don't. Yeah. People want to give people the secret. They want to give them the insider tip. They want to help them cut the line as long as they feel valued for providing that information to you. Mm-hmm. So I was like, let me let people get in on this. And I got some great advice. And people were like, when you turn 40, you really are decidedly an adult. The best thing that I heard was turning 40 means that you stop hearing about your potential and you start getting celebrated for where you are. Mm. Because when you're young, it's like, oh man, this kid's got such potential. Well, potential is the gap between where I am and where you think I could be. And I'm just looking at where I could be and being like, man, I wish I was there now.
Yeah.
And they were like, when you turn 40, people will start to look at you for where you are and stop telling you, oh man, you're really going to make it. Oh, you're really going to be something, which is essentially always telling you that you're not that thing. Right. So I was like, woo, I can't wait to sit for that. That sounds really nice. That sounds great. And I just wasn't afraid. I let my parents come up. They wanted to come and visit. I was like, yeah, sure. Come on up. I usually worry about my mom traveling. I have an infant niece and we were going to go on a boat, which was adventurous for an infant. And I was like, sure. If my sister thinks that's good, let's go on a boat. That sounds nice. I feel like I finally am at a place now where I trust people so much more than I ever did. And it was really hard for me to get here. And I have a lot of reasons to not trust people, but it is easier. It is easier to trust that people are good and they want to show up for you and that you can learn from them and that they're not all just going to lie to you or hurt you or try to take from you, that there isn't a finite amount of good and that we all have to fight for it, but rather people can show you where more good is. Like the island is much bigger than we think it is. And I think that's what I learned most about the 40th birthday. And I really enjoyed, and I'm really excited for now. And now I'm not worried about not getting older because I did get older. Despite everything I thought wasn't going to happen, it happened. And I'm healthy and everything is great.
I'm so grateful to hear it.
Yeah.
Do you feel like part of that external trust has like a piece of that puzzle is the internal trust and love and attention that you give yourself?
I do. I used to feel like I had to be everything to everybody all at once. And comes from growing up in theater, right? I have to be everything. I have to be a singer, dancer, actor, a real triple threat. I heard it my whole life, right? And in fact, you can be very successful just being good at the things that you like to be good at. And also, just because you're good at something doesn't mean it's what you're supposed to do. Mm. I was a phenomenal cheerleader. I was a UCA all-star cheerleader, like incredible cheerleader. Wow. I didn't really like cheerleading, but I was good at it. So I was like, well, I'm going to do it. I think now I also have this mentality where folks will get freaked out on TikTok if your views go down. And I'm like, I celebrate it. I'm like, good, my views are down. I can do some experimenting. I'm not being held to like a million people looking at what I'm doing today. It's only like 100,000 people looking at what I'm doing today. But I know it's someone else's turn. And I love that. And I want to celebrate that. And I want to be excited for that. My 100,000 views day is someone else's 7 million views day. And what an exciting time for them. I know what that feels like when you go viral. I want other people to have that feeling too, because it is so life-changing and exciting. So I think that's part of it, is understanding that it doesn't always have to be your turn. And in fact, when it's not your turn, that is just as fun sometimes. Like, That's great. I used to say my favorite plans were canceled plans because I like making the plan, but then I also love when people are like, I can't come tonight. I'm like, that's great. New opportunity to stay home and do something else.
Indeed. Yeah.
So yeah, I like the idea that it's someone else's turn when it's not your turn, or when you're low or things aren't clicking, knowing that they will again, because they have before and it's never over. It's not over. Your good time isn't over. It'll come again.
Precisely. There's no ending point. There's no finish line. It's it's not static. This is a dynamic thing. We've been here. We'll be here again. Yeah,
exactly. And there are times when you're at your height and you also have some lows. Like I would argue that I'm in a very great, successful career moment. And I still have times where in my personal life with friends, I have struggles, right? Where I am outgrowing a friend. That's hard. And it's hard to be like, oh, well, but you're so successful, you should just be happy. And it's like, I am, but your life changes with success. Your life changes with loss, and just like it does with success, and how that affects your personal life and how that affects the way people see you or the ways that they have decided you've changed and whatnot. That hurts. That stuff hurts. Even when you're really successful, there's not a binary. There's really high highs, and in your high highs, there might be something really shitty that happens.
It's everything everywhere all at once.
Yep. Exactly.
Yep. Yeah. And there's this piece of, the numbers, the success, the whatever that we're perceiving as being somehow impervious to our humanity, right? Somehow impervious to pain or struggle or all the nuances of being human, right?
Yeah. Because folks expect that hockey stick growth forever.
Yeah.
And
problematic.
I think you got to decide where success is for you. For me, success is not being on a major cable network TV show late night and making millions of dollars. That's not success for me, because the pressure of upholding that would crush me. I know where my limits are. I know how much public attention I can handle. I know how much editor input I want. And I know what it would feel like to have that. And then I'm the type of person who always worried, well, what if you lose it? Success for you is different. Like, there's this new kind of trend on TikTok that I love of people talking about declining promotions because they're happy. They're in a job that they know how to do that job. They're happy with that job. They don't want to get promoted because getting promoted, they'd have to maybe learn a whole new skill, maybe move out of the group of friends that they have at work. Yeah. Even if it was for a little bit more money, the money doesn't compensate for the overall experience. And I think that's important to keep in mind with success too, and with work, is like, what does success to you mean? What does it mean doing? What does it mean not having to do? And when you get there, it's okay to stay there. It's okay to stay where you're comfortable and you're happy. I'm very happy. I'm very comfortable. I still have time to spend with my wife. We're looking to have kids. I would be able to go to their hockey games right now. I don't know if I would be able to do that if I were trying to be Rachel Maddow, right? Like, she probably doesn't have a lot of time to go to kids' hockey games. Like,
yeah.
There's a different expectation, you know? So I think knowing what success feels like for you and defining it for yourself is also a part of happiness. And then allowing people to also have that for themselves and not pushing on them. Oh, you could be doing so much more. Maybe I don't want to be. Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't want to be.
Abundance. Yes. Yes. Yeah. You're beautiful just where you are and where you're at.
Yeah.
It's a essential. I mean, I have to remind myself of that, because, right, we all internalize the systems of capitalism that tell us to keep doing and working and plugging away and chipping at it and go, and buy, you know, whatever, right? Check in on where you're at, right? Where you're at is wonderful, right? And I'm talking to everyone right now. Like, that's such beautiful advice. Thank you for that reminder. I need it too.
I'm glad I said it to myself. I'm going to remind myself tonight. It just, I mean, there's been times in my life when I was working paycheck to paycheck as a waiter in New York, young, had like 6 roommates, and would have arguably said that was like a hard time. That was a hard time. Mm-hmm. And it was scary and it was uncomfortable and I didn't like it. But when I look back on it now, I'm like, man, that was the coolest time ever. I used to have the best roommates and like, I would get like an extra $20 tip and that $20 was life-changing to me. Those times are important too. Even when you're not at like your, what you consider perfect success, you'll look back at all of those struggle times and be like, I love it. And then what I find now is like, I'll have a success and I'll go back to those same comfort things, like putting butter on crackers or like eating ramen. Like there's stuff, you bring it all with you.
Ketchup sandwiches.
Yeah, it's all valuable.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. They're part of the story. Exactly. They contribute to who you are. Yeah, absolutely. I love all of that. So you mentioned you're grateful and you're content and you're happy with where you're at. Do you have other aspirations of doing different things? Like what are your goals? Do you have goals? You don't need to. Either.
Yeah, I'm a super hyper present person in that I love what we're doing today. And I find that each day increases the opportunity. What I'm so pleased with is I have found my people and this is it. This is where the castle is. This is the house. The foundation is here. This is where I live. And I'm just hopeful that we can bring more people into the room that also want to be here. So for me, as far as goals go, one thing that is so precious to me is the fact that I know exactly who I am, what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, and who I'm doing it for. Mm. And I'm just going to hold that. And I'm going to live here till I die. And what I hope is that other people catch that beacon and come join us over here so that they can meet other folks like themselves, so that they can be more conversational in their worlds, so that they can, you know what? Give me some advice. Some of the comments that I get from the extremist followers I have on either side, that makes me a better person. That keeps us, you know, really with the bumpers on to stay on mission. And so I think there's room for everybody. And I think it's worth saying there's room for everybody if you come in and appreciate what we're doing here, why we're doing it, and you want to be here because you like it and you respect all the other people and why they're here. So for me, I would like more followers to listen to V Interesting. I mean, I'd love for more people to join the podcast. We have the ability for people to call in and leave voicemails so that we can respond to them and hear how folks are reacting to the stories. What's great about TikTok is that people will stitch or duet my video so I can see how they took that story and what it means to them. And then they'll add to it. That makes me a better storyteller. That gives us a better picture and the rest of the community can see it too. So I'm not the only voice. Mm-hmm. I would love to have more of that in the podcast because I think it's so important to hear people's voices react to information so that you really get all the context, you know? We are talking about potentially doing some kind of book or something like that. And I'm not a big reader. I know that may be a surprise to people. I am not a big reader. I have dyslexia. Reading is a little bit tricky for your old pal, but I do it because it's important. Mm-hmm. But more, that's just something that, again, is a central piece that we can rally around and talk about. And that's a collective of thoughts and feelings. I want to go deeper with the audience we have, not necessarily wider. And I just want folks to know this is where we are. And if you want to come, stop by. I'd be a terrible cult leader because I'm like, okay, comment when you want and leave when you've got what you need. And if you want to come back, you can come on back and you could be whoever you want when you get here and it doesn't cost you anything.
I'd join that cult. That sounds great.
I know. We did an interview with Jamie Loftus on Ghost Church American Spiritualism, which was founded here in Rochester where I live. And the idea that this religion, it does very well, but it's decidedly not a cult because they just are too loosey goosey with who gets to come and when you get to leave and there's not any dues and there's not any like central leader,
yes,
you know?
I see.
And I feel like, I don't know, am I the American Spiritualism of podcasts and newscasters? Maybe. I'm kind of like, come on in. If it serves you, great. If it doesn't, that's okay too. If you want to come back later, that sounds good.
I think it's pretty okay that you're not culty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's a piece of news that has like filled your heart recently?
The first thing that came to mind immediately, so I'm going to go with it before I try to like think of something different, was the news that the rate of HIV transmission from mother to child in Botswana is at 1%. And I know that people don't understand what a huge, huge deal that is. Because here in America, we think of the AIDS crisis as like something that happened to queer men in the 80s and 90s. And the fact that we have all this medicine now and it's not really a thing and you can live with HIV and AIDS perfectly long, beautiful lives. And so as Americans, we don't get a lot of international news. We don't know about the struggle that it has been, in particular in Botswana, for mother to infant transmission. Mm-hmm. And recently, after 30 some years of research and education, because they don't have a vaccine for it or anything like that, and they don't really have medicine for it, the transmission rate has gone to 1%, which means that an AIDS-free future in Africa is possible. That is possible. And growing up in the 80s and 90s, my mom was a nurse. She worked with AIDS patients. I saw firsthand kind of how terrible the disease is on families, on your body, on society. And so it's something that I've followed really closely. And that is something that really warms my heart, to know that people with so few resources, through education and through building community around eradicating this disease, they did it. They're doing it. Mm. And I think that that is so beautiful and so incredible and so worthy of being raised up to every single light, because the scientists and researchers behind that program, they deserve a ton of applause for what they did. And the people of Botswana and the communities and the mothers who said, we are not going to let this, you know, destroy our culture and our community anymore. We're going to work against every odd to stop it, and to do it in 30 years is, I think, the most beautiful, incredible story. And I hope that they get more coverage for it too.
Wow. That's remarkable. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. It's very inspiring. Wow. It's truly 30 years, right? It's one heart at a time. That's how change happens. You know, it's not these big romantic, you know, influx of money or whatever. It's like people on the ground doing the work.
And people saying, you can do this and I'm going to hold your hand through it, which I think is so important to find spaces where that is the vibe. Yeah. You know, because for so long it was like, oh, well, you know, it's ravaging the country. Oh, well, no, not oh, well. I believe in you. We can do this. I'm going to hold your hand through this. Let's do it. Like you said, one person at a time. And now 30 years later, which is remarkable, here we are, 1%, and an AIDS-free future is possible.
Because you like, as a, you hear that, ravaging the country, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the emotional response, or the emotional response I may have, is overwhelm.
Sure.
I don't know what to do. How do I, like, you know, that's why we take a step back. We look at the big picture, right? We see that we connect with the people who are on the ground doing the work. We volunteer or whatever. We do what we need to do, but it can be done, right? Yep. It's not, the overwhelm is understandable, right? Because it's devastating. It's hard.
Sure.
And we step back. We look at the big picture. We look at the nuance. Where can we fit ourselves in? That's the work.
And where can we center the people who are most affected? And as soon as they did that, you know, it was like, now this matters to me. This isn't activism at me. This is someone believing in me and giving me the power to better my direct community. And we see it happen time and time again, over and over and over, in all countries on many issues. When you center the people in the issue, you have a great response.
Absolutely.
You know, because people are inherently good and they want to do good and they want to be helpers. And I have to believe that. I have to.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Yeah.
So speaking of helpers, we always wrap up the show, V, talking about our empathy heroes. So people in our lives, maybe even characters from stories or movies we love and cherish, who are empathetic, compassionate, feely people. I will go first to give you a moment to reflect on your empathy hero. I have a handful of empathy heroes this week, and they're all the members of the Lemonada team. I recently just started helping out, doing some contract work for Lemonada, and have been connected to Lemonada for some time now. Amber and Jackie and Jen and Lizzie and all of those folks, just salt of the earth, big hearted, so generous, so curious, so just such good people, and I'm grateful for them and their support. So they're my empathy heroes this week.
Yeah, I am so glad to hear that. And I will add, as when I was pitching Jess and Steph, who own the Lemonada company, on the podcast I wanted to do, I was trying to explain it, and I was very inarticulate, and I just started crying. And Jess was like, okay, you know what? You're getting a show. Yes. I see what you are trying to say without you using the words. And yes, we believe in this. So yeah, they are the most empathetic. They can see you through things that you can't even say. They're good readers. They're really good readers and really good humans. And in my personal life, my empathy hero is definitely my wife. From the time that we were friends, and we were friends before we got married, this is a person who just is a beacon for folks who feel misunderstood or left out. Mm. Natalie is the type of person who, if you're at a party and you're in the kitchen and you look a little awkward, she's going to come and say hi to you. If you're a dog on the street, they're going to come and say hi to her. There is just mm-hmm. something about her that she recognizes what's not being said and what's not clear. And what I appreciate so much about her, and now I'm getting choked up, is she can also she helps me so much to articulate my own feelings. And I think I'm a very emotionally intelligent person, but there are so many times that I am missing my own point. And she just has this way of being like, I think what you mean is, and it's just dead on, man. It's dead on. Mm. And I just appreciate that so much about her. And yeah, people, if dogs love you, you're a good person.
That's the quote of the podcast. Well, we all need a Natalie in our lives. We're mirrors for each other.
We do.
Like, we can't do this alone. This is not alone work. This is not living is not alone.
It is not. No, it certainly isn't.
Yeah. I love that. I love that you have Natalie. Yeah.
I do too.
We need it.
She is the key to my stability for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, V, where can the Feely humans out there connect with you? You know, obviously listen to your shows, all of that stuff.
So you can listen to my podcast, V Interesting, wherever you're listening to this one. It's available everywhere from the Lemonada Network. And you can find me on Instagram, YouTube. Now I'm doing shorts. This is very new. So the YouTube is the sandbox. That's a weird place if you want to find my weird content. And TikTok at Under the Desk News. And I'm generally like a very available person. So if you've got questions, if you've got story ideas, if you're feeling something and you want it to be discussed or better explained, my DMs are always open at Under the Desk News.
Amazing. Well, listeners, all those links will be at the show notes, in the show notes at feelyhuman.co. V, thank you so much for being a part of UME Empathy. It was wonderful. I felt a little scattered throughout, but you are present and a beautiful human that I'm a big fan of now. So thank you for being a part of this.
Thank you so much. That's very kind. Yeah, our feelings are kind of scattered, huh? It's like picking up confetti.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Thanks for having me, Nun.
You're very welcome. And to you listeners, as I always say, I'm here, you're here, we're here together on this wayward, overwhelming, awe-inspiring pale blue dot. We have each other. It's UME Empathy.